Bienvenue au train des jeux. Nous sommes ici à jouer au basketball. Il va vous conduire à la victoire. Car bonne dans notre grand départ. Et l'esprit du bel an qui vit en tous les mans. Et l'esprit qui ne meurt jamais. Parce que basketball, oui, basketball a arrivé.
Jouer.
Welcome to BizCast Ball, the Basketball BizCast. My name is Corbin Smith. Oh, jeez. Oh, lordy. Oh, man, let me... Oh, yeah, there we go. There we go. Sorry, I decided to record on my bed today. And I was doing it without my posture pillow. Which is to say, an exercise disc. And, you know, slide that underneath yourself, sit on it, gives you good posture, shreds your core while you work. As far as I'm concerned, it's the only way to do it. You know, just sitting on your mattress, that's just an invitation to hurt your back. Anyway, Saturday morning here in the great Pacific Northwest. Upon looking outside, I'd say it's gray. It's very gray. We got some trees here and there. Some screws on the windowsill. I heard a faint cry of seabirds. Not a minute ago. Caw-caw! Caw-caw! And it's more like, ah! Ah! Oh, I just heard one again. Maybe that was a meep. Meep. Just a light sparrow. Trying to turn this thing into a prairie home companion, in case people can't tell. Sort of the prairie home companion of basketball podcasts. That's what I'm aiming at. Anyway, I've wasted enough of your time. Our guest today is Jordan White. Jordan is a writer who writes at a lot of places. He's also, Hardwood Paroxysm, and in particular, The Podium Game, the website that this podcast is affiliated with. I'm not quite sure how these things work, to be completely honest, but he's my editor, sort of, I guess. And we talk about miscellaneous stuff, and then basketball. And then basketball for a while, and then some miscellaneous stuff, and then I bark. So enjoy.
All right, I'm here with Jordan White. Jordan, you're a writer, a producer of internet content. Is this true?
This is true. This is all true.
You write at Hardwood Paroxysm. You write at Fox Sports. You write at The Cauldron, The Classical, ESPN. You write for the Yosemite Tourism Council.
Yeah, that too.
You write articles about the beauty of Yosemite, and we're here to talk about Yosemite today. Jordan, what can you tell me about Yosemite? Have you ever been?
I haven't been, actually. It's weird. I write for the Tourism Council, but I haven't been.
What's the best national park you've ever been to, Jordan?
I don't know that I've ever been to a national park.
You've never been to a national park.
I feel like maybe I have when I was young, but I honestly can't remember right now.
Unbelievable.
I know, it's a Shonda.
Do you just not like the outdoors? Or?
I like the outdoors. I mean, I live in Denver. I have to like the outdoors if I live here. But I guess I've just never... Maybe I didn't like the outdoors at the time when I had the opportunity to go to the national parks, I guess. Because there was a time in my life where I was not an outdoorsy person at all.
When was that? When you were younger?
Yeah.
When you wore a younger man's clothes. what other hobbies do you have, Jordan? Let's get into those before we talk about basketball. I like to tease the audience.
That's fine. I write. I read a lot.
It's not a hobby.
Writing's a hobby.
Yeah, but you get paid for it sometimes, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. It's not a hobby.
Is reading a hobby?
I guess.
Okay.
I mean, that's like a generic ass hobby.
I'm a pretty generic guy when it comes down to it. Like,
do you also like going to the movies, Jordan?
Not really.
Oh, really? You don't?
Like, I like movies. I like watching movies. The whole entire experience of going to a movie theater, for the most part, doesn't do it for me.
What do you know? Have you ever thought or considered what you don't like about it?
No, I've never really considered it. I don't know what it is. I'd rather watch a movie in the comfort of my own home than having to go out and watch one.
I prefer to watch movies in theaters because I feel like I'm a part of an experience.
Sure.
And I almost sometimes... Lately, I'm getting better. Lately, I've surrendered myself to the idea that it's okay if I don't pay attention to the whole movie.
Yeah, but then what are you going to do for the rest of the time? I guess that might be one of my problems. If you don't like the movie, you're stuck there.
You could just walk into another movie.
I wouldn't do that because that's...
Oh, because you're not punk? You're not a punk like me?
Yeah, I'm pretty square.
I saw Inherent Vice last night.
Was it good?
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, I want to see that.
Joanna Newsom's in it. I didn't know Joanna Newsom was going to be in it. It really took me off guard.
I know. I like hiking. Hiking's fun.
Hiking! See, that is a hobby.
Is cooking a hobby, too? Because I cook a shit ton.
Yeah, cooking's a hobby.
Okay.
If hiking's a hobby, cooking's a hobby. Hiking, right, well, hiking's great.
Hiking's great, yeah.
I bike, everyone knows what I do. I bike, I garden, I write.
Can you talk to me about this gardening thing real quick?
I'm a Washington State Certified Master Gardener. I took a class. They teach you a bunch of things. You get certified. You help people in the community deal with gardens and identify pests. And I work in the greenhouse. We have a plant sale. I break down plants. Today I had this thing called zebra grass. I had this giant clump of it, and I had to saw through it with a gigantic saw.
Wow!
It was horrible. It was a bad plant.
How'd you get into that?
I went to Evergreen State College, and there were a lot of food sustainability people, and I was not doing that, but I was aware of it. And I'm like a vegetarian and stuff, and I like growing food. And I had never gardened before, and it seemed like the best way to learn.
That's fair.
Yeah. There we go. I mean, look, the audience already knows all this. They know about my listeners, Jordan. They know about the most intimate details of my life, and I'm talking about sex details.
Is that what you've been doing on your podcast this entire time?
Oh yeah, the entire time.
Have you not had any guests on, and it's just been you talking about your sex life?
Sex more than one sec. But
sorry, I got caught.
Totally. I just mutter into my microphone about sex I have, sex I think about having, and then. And sometimes I have a guest on, and they go, "Hey, are we going to talk about the calves?" And I go, "No, shut up. Tell me about porking." Anyway, so, Jordan, shut up and tell me about porking. No, we're going to talk about basketball today, I guess.
That's a much better idea, yeah.
Okay. Oh, I mean, how much better of it? Like, what would be more compelling, realistically? Like, basketball or... just the filthiest sex crap. Anyway, if you ask me,
we can do that next time.
Oh, okay. We'll really break it down.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get into the X's and O's of it.
Oh, the sexes and O's. The O is orgasm. The sexes and orgasms. We're gonna talk about basketball. The NBA. Do you like it?
It's okay.
Yep. Okay. I'm going to write that down. Circled it. Okay. Do you like any other kinds of basketball? Or?
No. I kind of like college. I'll watch KU, University of Kansas, when they play, but that's it.
Did you attend Kansas?
I did not. I'm from Kansas, though.
Oh. Where'd you go to college, Jordan?
University of Tulsa.
Arbitrary? Arbitrary?
Very arbitrary.
If you're from Kansas, why'd you go to the University of Tulsa?
Well, actually, I went to the University of Connecticut my freshman year.
Oh.
And I hated that. And then I wanted to be back somewhere in the Midwest and a bit closer to home, and so I landed on Tulsa and a place that was smaller than UConn.
Yeah, I went to a really, 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 really small college. So, anyway, we're getting distracted. We're here to talk about basketball.
We are here to talk
about basketball. I swear to God, that's what we're here to talk about. Do you have any favorite pieces of decor in your house?
My house is pretty fucking barren.
Oh, wow. This is hard to hear. This is hard to hear.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you are barren?
Sometimes.
Can you love? Sometimes. Do you think you can love?
Yes, I know I can. I'm just waiting for the chance to show people.
Every day? Do you boot up Twitter every day with your 1,000 some odd followers and think this is going to be the day I'm going to show them that I can love?
Yeah.
And you never do it, do you?
I never do. Or maybe they just don't see it.
Wow, this has been hard to hear. Anyway, basketball, right. So company policy has mandated that I talk about style this week. A hardwood paroxysm goon came to my house, kicked down the door, shoved me to the ground, drew shit on my face. He said, "You better talk about style this week, punk." And I said, okay, that's fine. So we're going to talk about style. Jordan, all right. What is style in basketball? Do we even know anymore? Have we lost the secrets?
Did we ever have the secrets, though?
I don't know. Did we have the secrets? What are the secrets?
I don't think we did.
What is the secret of style? Okay, you wrote about Rudy Gobert this week. Is this the case?
Yes.
And you say that Rudy Gobert has no style.
It's not quite that.
Okay.
It's
then
more
expound.
That
he... Explain okay. yourself, God damn it.
So when we – basketball, it's a very expressionist sport. I mean, when how a player plays is very much a reflection of their personality. Like Ricky Rubio, it's – when he's smiling, the ball is smiling basically.
Ricky Rubio exudes a degree of generousness.
And – joviality and just sheer exuberance.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with the concept that it's an expression of his personality, but
and then you look at a guy like Rondo, who's very cerebral, but both off the court and on the court, and the yes. way he plays, and he toys with people in both circumstances. Rudy Gobert has no expression.
Okay.
On the court, there is a complete void, a complete nothingness. When it comes to his expression, when he blocks a shot, I wrote this, it's not an extension of his personality. It's just an extension of him, of his limbs, and that's where it stops. Like, that's it.
Now, I've also watched Rudy Gobert play. Probably not as much as you. I mostly watch the Portland Trail Blazers and Ingmar Bergman movies. But I don't think I agree with you.
Okay. Tell me why.
Because he's, there's two things. One is that you talk about him not yelling. And I agree. He's not ejaculatory. He's probably an ejaculator. I mean, I can't say for sure. But he's not ejaculatory in that way. But I think that the lack of... I think that he's very bouncy. Or, like, his limbs are very bling, 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 bling. Like, I feel like I'm watching a curved person when I watch Rudy Gobert, if that makes any sense.
Oh, that's good.
But I also think that the lack of sort of aggression and that thing, I think that is a feature of the national basketball character, where he comes from. He's French. Played for the French team. Batum, I watch all the time. Occasionally, Batum is very clever, and he'll kind of do something, and then the camera will catch him, and we'll be like, "Ooh, how clever that is!" But for the most part, he's not like a celebrator. He gets like a dunk in transition, and he just kind of He just kind of wanders back. He chases down people all the time, and he's never like, yeah, I gotcha! Or Parker is the same way, I think I would say. Not a very clever, very, very light, but not, and not like, not particularly celebratory. I think it's a French thing is what I'm saying.
See, that's interesting that you bring up Batum, because I actually kind of talked to Batum about this when they were here. And he was saying, you know, the way he plays, how he does a little bit of everything, how he, you know, passes everything. He said that's an expression of himself. And so it's not just a yelling thing. It's not necessarily getting excited thing. It's just a reflection of the player's personality. But with Gobert, we never really get a peek into that. Tony Parker, even, like, yeah, he can be kind of bland, but there's even a style to him, a sort of expression to him too. The only other French player I can think of who is kind of similar to Gobert in this manner is Evan Fournier, who I would characterize him as just bland or vanilla. It's just like there's not a lot to get excited about. You're not like, oh, I really want to watch Evan Fournier play basketball.
Well, what do you get excited about? Because I think Gobert is tremendous. I love watching Gobert.
I didn't say Gobert is not exciting. He is exciting. I think he's a very exciting player. I just think he's fascinating in that he's not much of an expressionist.
Golly, I don't know if I agree. I just don't know if I agree. Like, it seems like... Oh, man. I just don't feel like... I don't know if I have enough aesthetic evidence to, like, counter in particular. But I feel like he's very distinctive.
He is distinctive. Yeah. How could he not be? He looks like... He looks like a Looney Tune, given, like, human life. His proportions are comical.
So, but, like, he... So you're saying that you don't feel like he's expressing anything about himself, is what you're saying.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
I don't think that style in basketball is necessarily an expression of self.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's not necessarily that he doesn't have a style. I was just saying he doesn't really have an expression.
Does have an expression. I mean, the lack of expression is an expression, isn't it?
Even then, I don't know. Because it's not... I don't know if it's a purposeful thing for him to not show anything.
Well, no, I don't think... I think the goal of a basketball player is to play basketball well for the most part, right?
Yeah, obviously.
And I think that they don't... I think that probably 90% of players don't make active considerations towards what am I expressing in the way I play beyond I want to win at a basketball game.
No, I completely agree with you there. But I'm saying sometimes it can't help but leak through that their personality or who they are informs the way they play. It's not a conscious thing. It just kind of happens.
And so with Gobert, you think...
I think it's not uncommon for a player to have one personality off the court and a different personality on the court. I think with Gobert, he very much has a personality off the court. He doesn't have a personality on the court. Like, one's not a reflection of the other, one's not the opposite. It's just like, it's not there.
So what do other people express if Gobert is expressing nothingness? I mean, I don't know if nothingness is the word, but...
Well, it's like I was saying, like, Ricky Rubio exudes happiness when he plays. There's just a bounce.
You know, I don't know if I ever think happiness. I think generosity more than I think happiness.
That's fair. Obviously, this is open to interpretation.
What does LeBron express?
Something bestial or bestial, however it's pronounced.
Like an extreme self-confidence. But yeah. Even then, I think that's what I would say about Kobe, is that he projects extreme self-confidence.
I know, but Kobe's always is like always kind of maniacal too. And with Rondo, there's always this air of I'm smarter than everyone in the room and I know it. And like, obviously basketball is just a game, but to Rondo it really seems like it's child's play. Even if he's not the best player, it always seems to him like this is just like, yeah, I'm just dribbling a ball on a court. Like,
are you saying that you think Rondo, you're not saying this, but like the extreme version of what you're saying is that Rondo has contempt for the game?
Yes.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. I think Rondo counts differently than everybody else.
How do you mean?
I mean, you and I like.
Like ever, he skips four after he counts 1, 2, 4, 5.
I was thinking more about like bases, because you know, you know, so like you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's what we use. That's base 10. But I think Rondo is more like base 7, in a way, like. Because, like, the assist gunning, for instance.
Yeah.
People don't do that. That's ridiculous. Everybody else would count to 10 if they were on a break. And, like, there was no way. And, like, there was no. Because what they always say is, like, oh, you got to reward the big man. You got to reward the big man on the break. Got to get him his points. That's the responsible thing to do, son. I'm always telling kids in the park.
Do they ask, like, who are you?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, they know who I am. They say, go away. But but for some, like, there's just something in Rondo that's broken, and he can't get all the way to 10. But going by sevens, you know, that makes some interesting things, too. That makes some effective things, you know. There are certain things that you can only computate through base 7 math, I'll bet. I don't know what they are. I can only think of one practical use for using different bases of math, but off the top of my head. But
yeah, but I feel like with Rondo, like, that's not a limitation to him. This is base 7.
Oh, no. He doesn't. No. He doesn't think he's doing it wrong.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it.
Do you think that players express their... Some players definitely, like, the way they play is a statement that they're making, and that's an active statement they're making. Right?
Yes. Yes.
Nick Young is the most extreme example of this. I don't care for the statement, frankly, but he does it. He's out there making a statement, which is...
And you and I kind of talked about this before we started recording.
We talked before we started recording.
Guys. Yeah.
Not to brag or anything. I do preparation.
His feels very artificial.
Oh, yeah. He feels like he's working on something.
Yeah, and it's interesting because reading Lee Jenkins today, it seemed...
I have not read this piece yet.
It seemed like he's a very genuine person, and this is very much how he feels, and this isn't like a manicured thing. But when he's on the court, it can't help but feel fake.
Yeah. Unlike JR or Dion to a degree, or... some other players whom he sort of resembles.
Yeah.
You know, I think JR's... If JR does something on purpose, I'd be stunned to a certain extent.
You mean on purpose in terms of calculated?
Yes. JR does not seem like a calculated person.
No, he's very much an id. Like, he's very much just an impulsive guy. He's like the basketball definition of shoot first, ask questions later.
Like the incredible thing about JR is that he ideally, and like he gets to this place sometimes, like he has a perfect statistical approach to the game. Which is to say, he goes to the rim and he takes threes. But it always seems like he arrived to the conclusion in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. It's like your heart and your mind's in the right place, but just the way that you went about it
I don't even know if it's that, like, your heart and your mind might be in the wrong place, but you arrived to the right answer, so.
But sometimes he doesn't arrive at the right answer, well.
Yeah, oh no, sometimes he absolutely doesn't, but.
It's more like that's his answer, and he thinks it's the right answer.
And it is kind of the right answer, but, you know, when he takes a bunch of threes and goes to the rim a bunch.
Right.
Because he does, I mean, you know, he doesn't fuck around in mid-range that much. Like Dion has the exact wrong answer.
All the time.
Yeah, yes. All the time. But JR, you know, get a good answer out.
Who do you think's the most self-aware of, like, between, I think, obviously Nick Young is the most self-aware, but between JR and Dion, who'd be the most self-aware player of those two?
Ask me in 10 years. Ask me when Dion's career is over. Ask me after Dion plays for the Knicks.
Oh, God.
Because, I mean, it's going to happen. Like, right?
He's destined for it.
Oh, yeah. When Dion was born, God touched his head and said, "You are a Knick." When that trade was going down, I was like, oh, shit, is Dion going to the Knicks?
I was hoping that was going to happen. It's like, well, because the Thunder aren't going to get him. Like, that's not a good move.
No, probably not.
And then they did.
What has he been doing on the Thunder? I saw that he did hit an important shot for them.
He did. He hit like a go-ahead three.
Yeah.
And he had missed that shot, I believe about a minute, if not less than a minute before. And KD got it to him in the same spot. Basically told him, we'll come back to you. And they did, and he knocked it down. So good for him, but it always feels like Dion's succeeding in spite of himself.
I don't. Other people care for his work. Other people who have been on the podcast care for his work. Not my thing.
Colin McGowan wrote.
Colin is the person. I'm not.
Yes. Well, his piece about Dion,
it's great.
For Vice Sports was great. It had one of my favorite leads that I've read, which is, anyways, that's where I met. Dion Waiters, my favorite dickhead, which is just a perfect summation.
I don't think that we've come any close. Have we decided what basketball style is yet?
No, because
it's starting to eat at me a little bit.
There's no one right answer, and there's nothing that is. There is no style of basketball. There's no one definitive style of basketball. And that's what makes it great, is that every player injects their own style, their own flair, whatever you want to call it, into the way they play.
I think the thing I'm having trouble grasping that you have been saying is that it is necessarily an expression of a player's personality.
It's not necessarily. It's not at all. But I'm saying a lot of players do. There are some players who it doesn't reflect who they are. But I think a lot of the players, especially a lot of the stars, if you look at it, like, that's who they are. Or not even the stars. I'm trying to think of who else. Kind of Goran Dragic. Steve Nash, even a little bit. To me, it's a lot of the, like, who it is are like guys who are passers, because I love passing. It's my favorite aspect of the game. And that's a very expressive aspect.
This is what I think about style. Gasol's that way. Gasol's my favorite player, and the way he passes is unbelievable. But
yes.
I think that if you're a basketball player, you have the ball in your hands. Or you don't. You're running around a screen or whatever. The main thing on your mind is that there's a problem in front of you. And the problem is that the ball needs to go into the basket, or you need to stop the ball from going to the basket, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the conclusion that you come to, and you have tools, you have a body, you have whatever degree of awareness you have. Like spatial awareness. I don't want to mark it up to anybody's broad spectrum intelligence or anything like that. I'm sure that there are brilliant human beings who are dumb basketball players. I'm sure that Einstein, if you took Einstein, right, Jordan, and then you super juiced his athleticism so much that he could conceivably play in the NBA, and then you dropped him into an NBA game, he would be a stupid basketball player.
Because he thinks too much?
No, just because he just doesn't have basketball intelligence. He has a hella physics intelligence.
I can see that.
Anyway. So you have these tools. And the creative aspect of the game starts when you have the ball in your hand, you have what tools that you have, and you have your intelligence, and then you have to take all of those things and you have to decide what you're going to do with all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Rubio, for instance, has whatever tools he has. And his tendency, his personality, I suppose this is how a personality feeds into it. Sorry, I'm running around a trail to figure this out.
A little bit. I'm trying to find you. I'm trying to see where you're going.
Okay. So his natural tendency, what he wants to do, is to pass a basketball, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's incredible at it. And he has a set of tools, and that is the way that he solves the problem. And I think that you can say that the way that he goes about solving the problem, and sometimes not solving the problem because he's so shitty at so many other things, is an expression of what he values. Oh, man. Oh, boy. Values.
I can kind of see where you're going with that a little bit.
Who is the most religious basketball player in the way that they play? Like, who is expressing an immense belief in God? I'm going to shut my door with a basketball real quick. I missed. Okay. Wait, I'm going to get it. Got it. One more. Got it. All right. Sorry, Jordan. What were you saying?
I'm trying to think about this. I have no idea. I have no idea who that would be.
You don't know. You don't, like, who's a notable religious poet? Who is the Chris late Paul. William Blake of, Chris Paul is not, Chris Paul is not expressing a belief in God.
He's not expressing, but he's very religious.
He might be, but his play is from the devil.
How dare you?
What? You watch Chris Paul? I gotta tell you about the kind of magic this guy's into. Come on.
I thought you were saying his style of play is evil, not like...
It's not evil. It's not good. Like, it's not moral. I don't know who is moral, but it's certainly not Chris Paul.
Steve Nash? Can we say Steve Nash is moral?
Was Nash dirty?
I never felt like he was dirty.
Yeah, he might be moral.
I feel like he's a moral passer. Moral player.
Oh, but now, okay, well, now when you stick passing into it, it's not about, like, passing is moral and scoring is immoral.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Rondo's
not a moral player in that regard.
I'm not saying that there's degrees. It's not
about morality. It's about exaltation of the Lord. Which players, by the dint of their style, are most exaltating the Lord?
Boris
Diaw. No, I mean the Lord of Pleasure. I've talked about Boris on here before. Boris's style, everything about Boris is pleasure. Like, that's it. He's like the way he plays basketball, the way he clearly lives his life. Like, Boris is the Dionysus of basketball.
Yes.
Or maybe he's not the Dionysus, but he is sacrificing to Dionysus. What he does
that's his sacrifice. His sacrifice. The way he plays is his sacrifice to Dionysus.
When Boris Diaw dies, God forbid. I hope he lives forever. He will stand at judgment. I mean, I don't know what it's like. Do you know what happens when you die, Jordan? What do you think happens when you die, Jordan?
Yeah, I really don't know. I want to believe there's something afterwards, but I think in all reality, nothing happens.
Oh, wow. The big blackness, huh, buddy?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? This is not the first time I've talked about the afterlife on the show. Anyway. So Boris,
so you just talk about sex and death for the most part?
I haven't talked about sex that much in reality, but I've talked about death more than a little bit. You should listen. It's great.
I do.
Yeah, Yeah, I talked about Death with Joe. Anyway. So Boris Diat, he's dead. A nation mourns. A world mourns.
A world mourns.
A world mourns. And he is before whoever the creator is. Let's call him Corbin. Corbin Smith. Let's call him Corbin Smith. I'm God. And right. He says, Boris, what did you do with your life? Let us look in the file. They pull out the file. They open it up and says, Boris, you have lived your life giving pleasure, receiving pleasure. You've lived a pleasure-centric life, Boris. They close the thing and they say, Boris, for eternity, you will sit on the right hand of Dionysus. And then Boris does that. Now, as far as a Christian god, a god who demands morality, cleanliness, sacrifice, I don't know what player that is.
I don't know either. Who I don't sacrifices know who that would be. The most? But we're not going for, like, the most sacrificial player.
No, but if we were. Who sacrifices the most at the altar of a god? Not a god that you or I can define here, but a higher spiritual presence that is constantly demanding sacrifice. Are you looking up a presence?
No, I'm actually looking up. Hold on.
God?
Not him either.
Oh, come on, her.
I thought we basically said on Boris Dia.
Well, yeah, for Dionysus.
Oh, I was actually wondering why your accent sounded so much like an Americanized Billy Connolly.
I don't even know who Billy Connolly. He was in that movie that sucks, right?
You have to be a bit more specific.
Boondock Saints. He's in that,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, I fucking hate that movie.
Yeah, well, you kind of sounded like him, or your god voice sounded a little bit like him.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just saying that Boris worships one god, but there are so many gods.
That's true. But Ryan Hollins, I feel like Ryan Hollins sacrifices a lot, but he's just never, his sacrifices are never taken.
I think remember peak Tyson, when Tyson was just unbelievable.
Really? He struck you as a sacrificial guy?
Yeah. Because all he did was dunk. He just dunked and played defense. When he was with the Mavs?
Yeah.
He was the ultimate aestheticist. If we assume, in the context of Judeo-Christianity, which has often been assumed, that the aestheticism, which is to say stripping everything out of your life except for the goal, the goal in Judeo-Christianity is to please God, I would say that Tyson's time in Dallas, when he just gutted every element of his game that wasn't dunking and defense, I would say that is the height of Judeo-Christian aestheticist basketball.
Okay. I guess I agree with that. Here's another player, Nick Collison.
Yeah, he's too gritty.
Wait, is Tyson Chandler not gritty?
No. I don't know. I
guess he's pretty gritty.
Yeah, he's pretty gritty. I just hate saying a white player.
I feel like Gerald Green made some sort of sacrifice to get to where he is. I feel like he's like a Robert Johnson.
But like he sold his soul to the devil to play the blues?
Yeah. Or to play the basketball.
Because he was an exile. I think whoever sold their soul to the devil to be good at basketball.
JJ Barea.
JJ. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, JJ is absolutely of the devil. Do you remember in the finals that the Mavs were playing in when LeBron posted up on him and he went, blah! And fell down. I think he was like way out on the right block or something. It was at that moment, I have a sense for these things. And I saw an upside down pentagram on the TV when that happened.
Did Revelations start playing in your head?
Like the book of the Bible?
Yeah, the book of the Bible. Like with Johnny Voice's Cash. Or Jesus Christ. Johnny Cash's voice reciting all of it.
No.
Oh, because that happens to me sometimes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you should get that checked out, man.
That's kind of nice. He's got a very soothing voice.
Did I put the right... Yeah, I did. Okay. Anyway, so that was weird. I want to talk about the Nuggets for a second. Okay. Actually, kind of in the context of style a little bit. 2 years ago, when the Nuggets, the year Danilo tore his ACL, the Nuggets were my favorite or second favorite team to watch.
Because they were awesome.
Because they were unbelievable. So exciting. They were so exciting. Team basketball. Danilo was incredible. Not like as a thing to, like, when you talk about a player who seems like he's probably expressing himself for real in a basketball court, Danilo was so far up there when he was going, because he was just like doing all kinds of crazy, like that guy shouldn't be able to dribble at all, but he does. And you know.
Yeah, I really enjoyed watching him in that system.
And Miller was on the team, and that guy is fucking amazing to watch. And it was awesome. It was a great team. And then, in a moment that historians, I feel like, have declared a great moment for Steph Curry in an unambiguous way, the Warriors, like, rolled him in the playoffs.
Yeah, Draymond Green shot like 57% effective field goal percentage. Steph Curry hit.
And Draymond wasn't good yet, so.
No, he wasn't good yet.
Yeah.
For that series, he was great. Yeah. The Warriors were like, Steph Curry was hitting 1 foot three pointers, like, you know, off 1 foot, pull up threes, like he does now. They just shot the shit out of the ball, and they had no one who could guard Steph Curry. Like,
yeah.
Andre Miller couldn't. Ty Lawson couldn't. I don't think anyone could have guarded Curry.
And Danilo was hurt too.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing for them, is that they did, and then that shifted Wilson Chandler into the starting lineup. And Wilson's a very good player, but he was a lot better coming off the bench, attacking second units.
The Nuggets had units where they would play Danilo and what's that noise?
That's now, I think, my heater.
Okay. All right. I'm just look, sorry, I'm looking at the waveforms, and I saw a concerning waveform. The Nuggets would play lineups with Danilo and Chandler together, where they sort of played power forward and small forward together at the same time.
Yeah.
They were just great. It was such a good idea. Like, and they were just great. They ran, they were awesome. And they were destroyed by the Warriors in
like Mark Jackson, of all people.
In a Steph Curry star turn that I always felt like was an undignified way for the Nuggets to go out. Like, oh, well, Steph Curry's a star now. And everybody goes, oh, the star, the star, the star. But the star consumed a pretty good planet when it was coming up. And now you're around the Nuggets. They are depressing as shit.
Yes, they are.
What's up with that, man?
Well, it all started when they let Masai Ujiri go. And
well, really, it all started 1976, ABA.
They fired George Karl, and they don't really know what they want to be. So Brian Shaw is their coach, and Shaw is very much a traditionalist. He's not a fast break guy. He likes traditional positions, which does not fit this Nuggets roster at all.
No.
And so ever since then, it's been a battle of, well, this is what our strengths are, but this is what I want to do. And management wasn't really sure what they wanted to do. They were convinced they were a playoff team, and then they saw how bad they were and how good the West was, and they're like, well, maybe we're not a playoff team. But they're still in the back of their heads convinced that they're a playoff team. It's really weird. They fired
Ujiri, and immediately, like the summer they fired Ujiri, they signed, or was it the summer they fired Ujiri? I can't remember.
So they let Ujiri go because he got that Godfather offer from Toronto.
Yes. An offer they couldn't refuse.
So they signed Nate Robinson.
Yeah. And J.J. Hickson in the same offseason.
J.J. Hickson, which reeked of someone going to the grocery store, not sure what they wanted to cook for dinner that night, and just thought, okay, I'll get a Nate Robinson, and sure, J.J. Hickson sounds good.
I thought
not knowing what they were going to do with it.
I remember when that happened at the time, I thought, well, okay, they fired Ujiri. And they signed literally the two players that I would say were inevitably going to get overpaid.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the two. I fucking talked about J.J. Hickson on this fucking podcast before. He was on the Blazers. He sucks. He sucks at basketball. He stinks. He's fucking terrible.
He's bred.
He's not even... Wait.
Because he's empty calories. Like, his double-doubles are... meaningless double doubles. They're empty calories when it comes to basketball.
Yeah, but bread tastes awesome, and I won't have you slandering it.
Hey, I love bread too. So what's like the worst type of bread?
Like stale bread, I guess. If you make any kind of bread good, it's good bread.
No, there are just some bad types of bread.
What kind of bread don't you like?
I'm trying to think. Not a big fan of pumpernickel.
Oh, I love pumpernickel. That's a flavorful bread.
That's not my favorite.
Okay.
I thought you liked cooking. I do.
What's your favorite thing to cook, Jordan?
Stir fries.
Okay. What do you put in a stir fry?
So that's the beauty of stir fry. You can put anything in it, but it's usually like broccoli, asparagus, carrots. Some sort of meat, usually lamb, because I love lamb.
Gross. That's a baby animal. Disgusting.
And then I'll use.
You know that's a precious little baby you're eating, right?
A lamb?
Yeah, it's a precious, beautiful little baby.
Okay, so now you sound like my friend when I tried to get a rabbit dish.
Oh, that's horrible!
That's what she said. Oh, I was like, I really want to get rabbit. Like, no, you can't. It's a cute bunny rabbit. I was like, it's dead. I'm not the one killing it.
Well, look, I think eating cows is wrong. Anyway, we're not going to get into it. Do you ever put kale in a stir fry? You kale man, Jordan?
Usually spinach, just because I don't buy kale all that much.
Okay. Spinach works in stir fries. Spinach is so good to cook into things.
Spinach and eggs. Eggs are terrific to cook into anything.
Anyway, now the Nuggets are so fucking depressing.
They're just really...
They're such a bummer. And
now, they've made a lot of trades, though, recently. Or not a lot, but so they trade away Mozgov. They got two first-round picks, which is a really good pickup.
They're starting to restructure.
They are, and it seems like they're at least trying to chart a course to where they want to go.
Is there a sense about whether or not they're going to keep Shaw?
Yes, in the sense is that I think they're going to keep them because it seems like they're making trades that allow Shaw to build the way that he wants to build and a system that he wants to run. Now, I still think they have to get rid of almost every single player to do that.
Yeah.
So they can have a fire sale. But it's not clear if they've accepted that they need to go full bore into tank or just selling everybody off. But they draft well. They got Yusuf Nurkic, who's been really good this year.
Yeah.
They got Gary Harris, who I'm very high on. So, yeah. I still don't know if they're going to be good, but it feels like they at least now have some sort of direction. A little bit.
But
they at least opened a map.
Does Shaw want to play triangle?
No, he doesn't want to play triangle. I think he prefers to play more like they did in Indiana when he was there, more post-up, stuff like that.
Okay.
He wants to play inside out. He doesn't want to play fast.
Does Nurkic post up? I'm behind.
He does. He's still young, so it's not like he's a post-up threat yet, but they'll throw it to him in the post. He's playing good defense. He's passing really well. He's a bit of a agitator.
Yeah.
Which is good. Which is good and bad. Feeling like it might get him knocked out soon. But yeah, he's played really, really well.
I want to talk about another style thing. Okay. I did this out of order. I meant to do the style thing, and then unbelievable. I'm terrible at hosting a podcast.
So disappointing.
But my voice is beautiful, and the ladies love it. So the hell are you gonna do? I want to talk about Jamal Crawford.
Okay.
Because before we did the podcast, I said, "What should we talk about?" And you said, "How about players you think aren't good, but who you like watching?" And for me, that player is Jamal Crawford. Now, I realize saying Jamal isn't good is kind of extreme.
Yes.
But he was on the Blazers for a while, and he was
not good on the Blazers.
He was not good on the Blazers. And I think that it's hard for me not to watch teams who are good now and not think that maybe what he does is not applicable to modern basketball anymore necessarily.
That's interesting.
With more passing, more wing defense types, more motion offense, I think he's a good ball stopper. Like, he's about as good at ball stopping as somebody could be, but he is a ball. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And when he was on the Blazers for a long time, I would watch the games on television, and I would go, "Oh my god, this fucking guy with his fucking dribbles, blah blah blah." It would drive me crazy. I saw Jamal in person for the first time at a Blazer game that I attended because they started sucking, and then tickets got really cheap. I might not want the Blazers to be good, because I am cheap. I'm a very cheap person. So I see him in person, and I think they win the game. I don't remember against who. And you see him do the stuff he does in person, and it's like, oh my god, that's a magic trick.
Yeah.
Like, that's incredible. Like, on TV, I just never appreciate it. But I saw him when in person. I was like, oh my, how does he do it? He's so fast with his hands. He's so good at it.
His dribble's awesome.
Yeah. And then I saw him again in person at the Pro-Am. You know, it's the same way. It's like, he's the best at that kind of thing than anybody's ever been. At the Pro-Am, at one point, he just started dribbling behind his back while bringing the ball up. which is, it's like the height of, I don't know.
Jamal Crawfordhood?
Yes, Jamal Crawfordom. There's another player like this. Is there a player who you saw in person who you didn't get it until you did?
I don't know about that I didn't get it, but it was more that I finally got to see him, and it gave me an even further appreciation. One was Brandon Roy, my all-time favorite player.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of him.
Yes, I'm sure you have. So growing up in Kansas City, didn't get to see a lot of NBA games live. But they started playing these preseason exhibition games at this arena downtown. And one was Heat. It was the first year of the Big Three in Miami, and against the Blazers with Brandon Roy. And Roy was just incredible that game. It was a preseason game, but he was just incredible. It was a joy to watch him. As far as players were like, I finally got it. Harden, I think, actually.
Really?
Except I still liked Harden, but then seeing him live is a completely different thing.
That's interesting, because I think y'all are talking about style this week, and there have been a lot of articles lately. I saw one on Vice. I'm sorry, I can't remember who wrote it, but about how Harden is basketball death. It's like aesthetic basketball death to a lot of people.
I actually was writing something about this. I never got around to publishing it, but I used to say that Harden is the least entertaining superstar in the league. I think I've hedged on that a little bit now because, well, one, because like Houston's system is a little different this year, but also he's still a really good passer, and he still just like contorts his body unlike anyone else does. So I still enjoy watching him in Houston as much as I did in Oklahoma City, but I still don't know if I'd call him now the least entertaining superstar.
I kind of like it because I like players who shake up squares a little bit, and I think Harden fucks with the viewers a little bit.
Oh yeah, he absolutely does.
And maybe it's not the most attractive thing from a flow standpoint, but what it gets out of people is always like, I always think it's fat. Like how angry it makes everybody.
Yeah, or how divisive people are about it.
Yeah. Chris Paul's like that too, and Wade is definitely like that. People hate Wade from like a how he plays the game perspective.
But I also know people who like Matt Moore loves Dwayne Wade.
Oh, I love Wade too. I love Wade, because he's like, he's just, I mean, yeah, he doesn't play like the right way or whatever. Like he's a gamer.
Yes.
And I think it's tremendous to watch. The other player who I've seen in person, is Tony. Tony is unbelievable to watch in person.
Tony Allen?
Yeah. Have you seen him?
I have seen him in person. It is a joy.
Yeah, it's incredible. I don't know what drives that guy on a certain level, but like, first off, he's fucking everywhere on defense. And there's like a palpable intensity about him, like about him defending that you sense if you're seeing him in person. But also when he's on the bench, he's just like, he doesn't sit down. He waves a towel the entire time. He claps. He's the greatest.
No, he is. He's great. My favorite Tony Allen moment actually has nothing to do with him playing. It was James Herbert was interviewing him once, and Tony started barking at him.
Are you shaving?
No.
Are you shaving? Did you just start shaving in the middle of the podcast?
It's my dryer. My dryer is incredibly loud.
Your dryer shaves you?
Yeah. Does yours not?
No, that's a very multifaceted dryer. Does it have an operating system you're falling in love with?
It's not her yet.
Are you gonna get some SQL in your computer? In your dryer, sorry. Ugh. Everyone has SQL in their computer. Tony, James Herbert, he started barking at James Herbert.
Started barking at him. Barking and growling at him. But it was great. It was hilarious. Probably a little scary for James, but, you know.
I was talking to friends of mine this week, and I said, what are some rude things that I do? And she said, well, I have to lock my car door when we go driving because I'm scared you'll bark at people. And I said, Rachel, I did that once, and it was really funny. I don't know, so I relate, I guess.
Do you relate to Tony Allen barking?
Yeah, it's fun. Have you ever done it?
I can't say I've ever barked at someone.
Holy shit, it's fun. Oh, man.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, well, maybe I'll give it a shot. Because they just
don't know what to... Nobody knows what to do when you start barking at him.
Well, because people don't bark at people. I really, that's a perfect time to end the podcast.
thanks to Jordan. You can follow him on Twitter at Jordan S. White, where he promotes all of his various projects. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbina Smith. That's CORBINASMITH. Hey, send a letter my way, corbin.smith@gmail.com. Maybe I'll read it on the air. This is broadcast over air. Not like electricity over air, like magic through the air. So, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. Have a wonderful day.